Hello and welcome to Q&A Quest episode 410. I am your host, the Bubsy sequel no one asked for, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, with me as always.
The Bubsy sequel everyone deserved, David Bernie Family Master.
Nice. So Gamescom happened with lots of unexpected things and some expected
including
things.
Bubsy.
Yes.
Unexpected things. Bubsy. Expected things. Also Bubsy.
And also, I don't know, Silk Song or something like that.
Oh, next week. Yeah. And a bunch of indie games fucking delayed themselves to try to not get caught in the whirlpool.
Can't say that that's a bad idea.
Yeah. Like, Silk Song's not something I'm super, like, up on, but it's, you know, suck all the air out of the room for a lot of indies.
I'm going to play it. And I do appreciate that the team has spent all this time just because, hey, we're making money, so why rush?
We have no need to rush. There are three of us.
This is a healthy attitude to have.
There are rumors of another Nintendo Direct next month.
I saw that. I'm ready for it.
There's almost always one in September, so it's not exactly a bad bet.
I need Metaphor on Switch 2.
You're not going to get that until after they've already released Reload, my dude.
No. If it takes too long, you know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to play through it on PS5, and then they're going to announce it, and I'm going to be pissed off.
You'll finally force it forward, force it into existence.
Yep.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
But yeah, there are some interesting announcements at Gamescom. Also some Y announcements, as we've referenced.
Yes. Bubsy 4 was the weirdest, but also just watching that.
It was not the fourth Bubsy game.
No, but it was like, why does all this animation look so familiar? Why does this developer name look familiar? It's the freaking developer of Demon Turf.
Yep, which is a very good indie platformer that is currently deeply on sale.
Yes.
So they got somebody competent to actually make it.
Yes, which means I'm kind of probably going to be playing Bubsy 4 on stream, and it's probably going to be really good. And I'm going to be angry about
this. This is not a sentence I was expecting to hear this week.
No one expected that.
Yeah, no, Bubsy 4D looks good. We got some weird stuff. There's a new Lego Batman.
Yeah.
Seems like a weird open worldy thing.
It honestly kind of looks like a new Arkham game.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, to the point where they actually added difficulty levels for people like me, which means it probably plays more like Lego Horizon Adventures than it does the older Lego games, so probably more action, less puzzly.
Yeah.
Which is good, because the
a little less talk,
style kind of got played out.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, it's important to make changes. We got at least one thing announced for Switch 2 that I did not have on the bingo sheet.
One.
Which was Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is a nice continuation of all of Bethesda's Nazi punching games finding their way onto as many platforms as possible. Mm. That's due out next year. According to rumor, that will be followed up with Starfield, which is going to be impressive if real. The They showed footage of the new Onimusha. That's kind of neat. The impressions I've seen are that the game looks like Souls, but plays like Onimusha, which I'm fine with.
Interesting.
So that's kind of nice. For those curious, they went with the most famous samurai for the protagonist of this new one. You are playing as Miyamoto Musashi.
Mm-hmm.
Which you cannot pick a more famous samurai. It doesn't exist.
I mean, they do, but I mean, internationally famous, that's a different issue.
Yeah, certainly, like, you could maybe pick one that was, like, similar levels of famous, might be a little more famous in Japan, but certainly not with the recognizability. I want to say that, let me just double check. Yeah, like, and they've continued the series tradition of the face model as a famous actor with, again, one of the more famous, like, samurai actors with Toshiro Mifune. So, that will probably be a problem to re-release at some point in the next 10 years, so I guess get it while it's hot. Let's see. What else we got? Mortal Kombat Legacy Collection has things that will entice me and four other sickos.
I'm also interested in that nonsense, by the way.
Like, I have no desire to ever play Mortal Kombat 1 through 3 ever again. I think they're bad. But
they are
also including Mortal Kombat Mythology Sub-Zero, an absolutely garbage platformer action RPG type construction that is still made in like the Mortal Kombat fighting engine, which means that in order to make sure that all the inputs stayed the same, their solution was to make it so that Sub-Zero has a button to switch directions. Absolutely horrible. Difficulty spikes super hard in level 2. There's a horrible insta-kill gacha for the boss of level 2 that has an entirely non-intuitive input, where you defeat the boss and he's like a wind god that tries to throw you off the stage, and if you don't run to the edge of the arena and hold down, which the game interprets as Sub-Zero grabbing onto the ground to try to hold himself in place, you will be unavoidably blown off the stage and have to try again. Absolutely horrendous. Never used again.
Is there any warning that you actually need to do that particular action?
There's warning that you need to do something. There is absolutely nothing to indicate that that's how that works at all. It's completely unintuitive. It's incredible. let's see. But also included in this collection is Mortal Kombat Advance, which was an attempt to port Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 to the Game Boy Advance, farmed out to a developer and given 2 months to develop.
Oh dear.
2 months?
Yes, 2 months. I remember it because in the illustrious history of one of America's longest running video game magazines, Electronic Gaming Monthly, it was the first and one of only two or three games to ever receive a 0.0.
Oh dear.
Wow.
It was to the point where the review that gave it that score starts with, "The score you are looking at is not a misprint." it was utterly unprecedented that something would actually manage to obtain that score. like genuinely horrendous. Don't do that to me again.
I'm sorry. It's for Joe.
Engage.
I understand. But genuinely a horrendous video game. I'm glad that it's being preserved. There's a bunch of other weird things on this. There is a prototype net-enabled version of Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3 that has, I don't think, ever got officially released. It was called, like, Netwave or something. And it's from, like, 1997.
Huh.
Just something that existed decades ago that has existed as just a piece of something that was largely complete but never released because it just didn't work that well at the time. So that's interesting to see.
What about Mortal Kombat Trilogy?
I think Trilogy's on there. I think Trilogy's on there. But that would require you to want to play actual Mortal Kombat, which again is a dubious business.
I think you've got to play any of the old ones. That's the most stupid and ridiculous and actually fun to play.
I mean, that's the one that's just everything. So if you just want, like, if you must play Mortal Kombat, that's the one that makes the most sense. Hardcore fans prefer UMK3. The other things they added that are stupid are Mortal Kombat Tournament Edition, which is a Game Boy Advance game. Mortal Kombat... And Mortal Kombat Special Forces, a game whose development was so troubled that one of the co-creators of Mortal Kombat just immediately left after that.
Wow.
So for those keeping score, the two co-creators of Mortal Kombat were John Tobias and Ed Boon, which is why Noob Saibot is called Noob Saibot.
Yes.
Saibot left after Mortal Kombat Special Forces. Deeply troubled beat 'em up. I think the original conception had a few like Resident Evil style elements. You could play as Jax or Sonya. That went away. Co-op went away. It's just a really, really, really bad top-down 3D beat 'em up. But it has essentially never been acknowledged since. So it is nice to see that be preserved, that piece of hellish history. Bad games are important too.
Now in that case, do they have the original Game Boy version of Mortal Kombat on there?
Yeah.
Sweet.
Game Boy and Game Gear.
Sweet. Oh no.
Can relive the terrible portable games I played in my childhood.
Yeah, MK1 and 2.
Reminding me of my not exactly review of Stargazer. It was like, I would only recommend this in the same way I would recommend an Ed Wood movie.
It's important.
It's important to see how badly people can do something in order to be inspired to do better.
Mm-hmm.
I played Mortal Kombat 2 on the Sega Genesis, and I loved every second of it.
Well, you'll have that version. You'll have access to the 32X version.
Wow. Wasn't there a Saturn version, too?
That might have existed in Japan. I know there's a Japan-only PS1 version of MK2. We got more trailers for the Xbox ROG Ally.
Ugh.
They still will not say how much it costs, which is concerning. It has been listed in
a piece of information.
Yeah,
waiting to see how the tariffs impact it, maybe. I don't know.
Probably at least a little bit. It's been listed in at least one retailer's backend as $900.
I'm expecting $900, to be honest with you.
That would not surprise me in the slightest. It's more expensive than the ROG Ally. The ROG Ally is already, like, pants-shittingly expensive.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Engage.
Oh, that reminds me. Thank you, Moogle Lactomancer, for giving me some Fire Emblem tips in the chat before I forget, because I will forget.
They've been tuning into my streams. It's great.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to portable first-person Nazi punching with Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Oh yeah, that's coming to Switch too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Will the data all be on the cart, or is there going to be a key cart? You know,
it's a Microsoft game. It's going to be a key cart.
Yeah, I was going to say, because even the PS5 version is not on disc.
So it's okay. Saved yeah. for the Xbox version.
Yeah, so it's like
actually own that game.
I have a predicament. The predicament is I don't want Game Pass. I don't want to buy digital Xbox copies of Doom Dark Ages or Indiana Jones, but then even the PS5 discs do not have data on them, and then I'd have to start over in those games. I already have some progress from being on Game Pass. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's just no right answer. There really isn't.
Not really, no. Let's see. So I'm just sort of flipping through everything for things that I might any of us might actually care to bring up from this. Oh yeah, Lords of the Fallen 2? Note, Lords of the Fallen 3? Yes.
I Lords still... of the Fallen 2 / Lords of the Fallen. Okay. So this
yeah, you okay, just I genuinely had to sit there and think
destroyed.
For a second.
Destroyed. Were you trying to get that character killed on purpose?
I don't Sorry. Play with permadeath. I don't give a shit.
every piece of information about Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 makes me feel bad for its developer.
Yeah, I thought that game had vanished. I was shocked to see that it was coming out.
So it's been delayed years. It changed developers like 4.5 years ago, and it's been delayed several times. And in something that I'm sure was born in marketing's head, they took two of the game's like six classes are locked behind a $30 day one DLC.
Huh?
And let me be clear. Your vampire clan should be affecting basically everything in the game. There should be, every conversation in the game should be affected by your vampire clan. So locking those behind things is not great.
No.
It's a strange game. It feels like. So it's being developed by a company. Let me make sure that I get the name right, because its name confuses me. So it is being developed, this final version is being developed by a company called The Chinese Room. I don't know why it's called that.
The Rapture game? What was it? No. They did something that I played. I forget what.
Yeah, I'll pull them up. But basically, The Chinese Room, they are a British developer. They are named after a thought experiment. But let's see. So the games that I knew them for were Dear Esther.
Oh.
Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Yeah, okay.
And Amnesia, Machine for Pigs. Dear Esther is a walking sim. I think if Everybody's Gone to the Rapture might also be a walking sim.
Yeah, I own it. I never actually got around to playing it.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that to... they also did Still Wakes the Deep. When I call them walking sims, I'm not saying that to be dismissive. But... I am confused. Does comport.
I know what you mean, because I played Dear Esther and you walk. And they are objects and read documents, and there's a neat story and there's good visuals, but you just walk. That's it. And that's okay.
They are storytelling characters.
Yeah.
Allegedly there's not. Like stat checks in dialogue in this new Vampire the Masquerade. There's nothing that feeds off of like your stats to determine what you can do, which really feels like it comports with a design philosophy that is less rooted in in RPG design as we would understand it. There's just a lot of choices here that feel very odd. Like, at this point, it feels like calling it Bloodlines 2 is a mistake. And that it would be better to set expectations by listing it as Vampire the Masquerade and then a different subtitle, which they have done many times in the past. So I feel like this is going to come out and get absolutely pilloried just based on how people are reacting, both to some of the design choices, which again feel like they may have better suited a different extension of the Vampire the Masquerade brand, and based on the fact that it is it just doesn't look like a sequel to the previous one. So I think that it feels like they've like Paradox / White Wolf decided that they wanted to take advantage of the fact that there was like a lot of esteem around the name Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines in specific, and made a lot of choices that came down to marketing and cash extraction between the way that they are doling out the additional clans and the way that the choice was made to make this Bloodlines 2. So I what I'm saying is I feel bad for how those developers are going to inevitably treat it in the coming months. But yeah, like those are a lot of the stuff that I care about. It was a reasonably fun to watch things get announced. And of course, Bubsy 4D. Which I will bring up has perhaps the first Bubsy joke that I've ever found funny. Which was in the menus, one of the skin options is one that makes you look like Bubsy 3D, like that model of Bubsy.
Uh-huh.
And the menu description describes that it is more aerodynamic because it has fewer polygons. And I thought that was cute. That was a joke that made me laugh. So yeah, I'll play that. I can't be stopped. It's from the developers of Demon Turf, which is a very nice little indie platformer that is currently, it and its shorter spinoff, Demon Turf Neon Splash, are currently bundled on the Switch eShop for like $12.
Yes, and note, that's the
only the bundle.
Only the bundle is on discount. If you try and buy the games individually, they are currently full price.
Yeah, so the bundle is currently cheaper than buying Demon Turf.
So go buy them right now. Do it. We'll wait. Okay, we won't actually wait because that makes no sense. Also, Yuka Replay-ly. I don't remember if that was ever confirmed for Switch 2, but it is coming to Switch 2 on a full cart.
It was previously confirmed for Nintendo consoles, which was a weird thing to say when you weren't able to say that it was coming out on Switch 2.
So did they have like a dev kit at that point, maybe?
Evidently they have one now.
Okay.
But yeah, like it was just kind of like one of those things where it's like, I guess someone says you're not allowed to announce this yet because you just said Nintendo consoles, and it's like, well, there's one, and then there's another one that's coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's ongoing. That's coming forth. But yeah.
So did Nintendo officially stop putting games on 3DS?
They did that years ago, my dude.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, just checking.
It's been the Vita digital shop has outlived the eShop.
Wow,
which is dumb, but.
It's bonkers.
That really has more to do with the fact that when they tried to get rid of it, people got really, really mad at them.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, where the hell was the outrage for the eShop, you motherfuckers? Pardon my language.
I mean, they were mad. It's just Nintendo, like, the underlying technology beneath the underlying technology beneath the eShop didn't really give them a lot of options.
That's probably true.
I was going to say, wasn't the Vita similar to, like, the PlayStation shops and...
Like the Vita shop, the PSP shop, and the PS3 shop are all kind of attached to each other. Like you can no longer access the PSP shop from the PSP, but you can still from like a PS3 or a Vita download PSP games. Like those shops are all attached to each other. When one dies, all of them will be dead.
Yeah.
But for now, they're conjoined.
Yeah, they're conjoined, and broadly speaking, Sony like occasionally makes noise about like we might eventually get rid of these, and then people get mad. But like the underlying way that they're constructed is less of a problem.
I wonder if that has anything to do with them having to completely rebuild PSN that one time.
Maybe, but. Yeah, so those were the things that stuck out to me as a video gamesman. But yeah. So hooray!
Hooray, Silksong, I guess.
Ugh, that's for someone.
Don't care.
I will be glad that it does not have to, that every time that a new industry thing comes out, people won't be asking, where is Silksong?
Well, I have a feeling those...
Did you see the official reason why it took so long?
Yeah,
they had the money to not have to rush it out. That was it.
Pretty much, yeah. Which is, I mean, not a bad thing. It's
sure, but those fans are never going to stop complaining.
Yeah.
Like, that game is going to come out, and it is going to, like, cause a bunch of people to be like, this isn't as good as the last one. And I feel bad for them for that.
Even when even if it's better than the last one.
Yeah. Like, it really, like, its quality cannot stand up to people spending 7 years keening for it to exist.
Maybe they should have just played Prince of Persia instead.
Wow. Doesn't even have to be instead. Just play other games. Sure. It's okay.
Yeah.
Other things exist. Yes. Shadow Labyrinth just came out, folks. Come on.
That's not how most people actually interact with media. They tend to find the one thing that they really vibe with, and then they have trouble going for anything else.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's also not a healthy way to interact with media.
No, it is not, but I mean, if you look at fandoms of any stripe, it's... usually a hardcore of people who like this one thing and are incredibly hesitant to look at anything else that even is similar.
Mm-hmm.
Because they like this one thing too much.
Mm-hmm.
There's people who think Hollow Knight is the best Metroidvania ever made. I'm like, no, it isn't. Not even close.
It's definitely really good. It's just, but there's other games out there.
Yeah.
And you would know if you tried them.
Yeah, I've tried all of them.
I was saying you and the hypothetical.
Yeah, okay. That's what I mean. Like, I've played so many Metroidvanias, and to me, Hollow Knight is just not anywhere near the top of my list. You know, I don't know. Didn't care for it. It was trying too hard to be Souls-like. You know. I'm opinionated.
Not opinionated enough.
Have more opinions.
I mean, would any of us be here if we were not opinionated?
No. Nope. It's a prerequisite for having a podcast. You need to have strong opinions about specific things.
I mean, it's kind of a prerequisite for actually doing anything with RP Gamer.
That's true, yeah.
I love having
And on my streams on RP Gamer now, I'm like, okay, just keep in mind, the opinions expressed herein do not necessarily reflect those of RP Gamer as a whole.
Fire Miner.
But we do have your back, if necessary.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Fire Miner, yeah. Fire Miner's been watching my streams, too. He's cool. He was asking me questions during my live stream, and I'm like, hey. I'll answer them, but...
Wait a minute. That's understandable. Wait a goddamn minute.
I may be playing a game while we're talking.
It's okay.
I'm just typing.
Well, I kind of sort of didn't eat a real dinner, but I'm going to...
Maybe do that. I would recommend doing that.
Yeah, well, I just... When you guys said you're going to start early, I'm like, all right, let's just knock this out, and then I can have some type of snack before I go to bed. That's fine. Everything's fine.
Everything's fine, likewise. Engage. Yeah. Oh my god. Stop saying that, for the love of god. Okay.
Okay, so the sound did not just cut out on me.
No.
Okay. So
any chance that the 3DS Fire Emblem games will get re-released on Switch 2?
I wouldn't say
eventually,
no,
just
also...
because it's a Nintendo property and they like to bring stuff forward from time to time, but maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's guaranteed to be on Switch 2. Like, I'm sure we'll see them eventually, but...
I mean, it's just one of those things that you cannot absolutely rule out just because of which series they are, who owns the series, and who owns the platform they'd be played on. It happens to be the same company.
So it could end up being just 3DS emulation on Switch Online, which would also be fine. I wouldn't complain about that at all.
I would be perfectly happy.
That would present a lot of obstacles, but I could see that.
Yeah. Well, they'll do DS first and try to iron those out.
3DS games showing up on Switch, because that would mean that, hey, finally we could get Saga game, the Saga remakes as well.
That'd be original DS, but yeah.
I mean, I did say the DS and 3DS, so...
Oh, yeah, I only heard 3DS.
I would think if they do DS...
Do the one, you'd probably do the other.
Yeah.
At least for the mechanical issues.
If they can find a way to...
Companies...
It's a matter of if they can find a way to do DS, then... That would clear most obstacles towards 3DS, I would think. And then the 3DS just wouldn't have the 3D effect, you know?
Yeah. We've seen
it generally doesn't need any. That was a gimmick. But
Yeah.
I was thinking if they do the 3DS, then perforce they end up with the DS as well. So
we've seen a few companies like go through the trouble of like doing some minor re-engineering to make DS games work outside their context between things like the Mega Man Zero and Zex Legacy Collection, or the Etrian Odyssey Collection. Legend Legacy, the Etrian Odyssey Collection. Have been buzzing about the Magic X 040, which is an emulator handheld made to emulate the DS. Like, that's cute. I don't personally have a lot of use for such an object, because I would honestly find it easier to hack a 3DS, but I could see...
I have so many 3DSs that would be a stupid object for me to buy. And someone would have...
You would have the one that's like a mimic 3DS.
God.
Yeah.
And Wheels, heads up, but apparently it's going to be a lot harder for me to mail anything to America from Japan.
I heard about that. Oh, geez, yeah,
the de minimis stuff. Currently, Japan Post is allowing packages to be sent to the U.S., but it cannot be worth over $100.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
And even then, nobody is sure how any form of carrier fees or customs taxes or anything are going to be applied, because none of that is spelled out in any of the announcements being made on the U.S. side.
Of course not.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, I don't think there's anything left that you're interested in me sending you, if anything ever pops up, just be aware that it is probably a little more expensive than we would like, just to get it anywhere.
And I was just going to say that I've used a DS emulator. It might be Melon DS, or it's an emulator core for RetroArch that I've used, and you know, it does work just fine on Steam Deck. So one thing that's great about Steam Deck, you don't have to hack it to get emulators and ROMs, although it barely qualifies as a handheld device. But in the DS emulator, you can
fuck around with the
It's a cool emulator because like you can set it up where you press a button to switch between the two screens, so that way you're not. Like, you have the option of displaying them both in various aspect ratios, but I prefer to just have a button designated to switch between them as needed. So I was playing some Castlevania.
That would really depend on how those two screens relate to each other in the game itself.
That's true, because I played some Castlevania games where the second screen is just like your map or inventory, and you can easily switch between
I'm thinking something Tears Crown, what was Summon Knight Tears Crown, where the battles were actually dual level. You had characters with ranged attacks who were the only ones that capable of hitting anything on the top screen things like that. And also gimmicks that, like, literal in battle gimmick devices that would work one way or the other.
Yeah, and obviously for like trying to draw shit, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Or something like Sigma Harmonix, which was also very important to have both screens visible at the same time, but also both screens were tilted to be vertically aligned. Left, right, vertically around. Yeah. Apparently that was more common for visual novels for the DS, but this is about the only one of the few RPGs I ever saw that made use of that. Other one was Sword World, actually.
The book format DS stuff was also used for things like Hotel Dusk and Ninja Gaiden Dragon Sword. It was used occasionally, just not consistently.
It was kind of annoying to work with. Also, you couldn't. I don't think it usually didn't have a left hand, right hand switch, so at least 10% of the population was not going to be able to use it properly. Have an issue there.
So that's I think that there's a lot of like minor logistical things with potential like DS and 3DS hardware stuff that that they may prevent them from doing something as simple as just like a Nintendo Switch Online DS, but we will see. Let's see.
I was also going to say though, I think my favorite version of Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is actually the 3DS version, because it just looks, with the 3D effect on that small screen, it actually looks quite sharp and colorful. Yeah.
I'm just checking in to make sure that we've got that I'm not missing any. We've got a couple comments under the last one.
Oh,
at least one.
You've got positive comments.
I'll be here. I mean, they're comment questions, and they're okay. From regulars.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I was going to say, I knew we had one. We have a second one?
Yeah, one from Strawberry Edge and one from Shaman.
Okay.
So this one's from Strawberry.
Oh, and then real quick, there's a game called Demon School. I haven't tried the demo yet, but it kind of looked like Disgaea 3 a little bit. But apparently that's been delayed as a result of Silksong. Yeah. Okay. And but they posted on Blue Sky. They were like,
it's not going to be opening on the same weekend.
Yeah. So on Blue Sky, they were like, no, we're just, it's delayed. This is why it is what it is. Like, whatever. But I think, I don't know, something like the publisher like compensated them or I don't
know.
Publisher
is paying for them to continue development while they wait for the time to release the game.
Right. Okay.
And some of the stuff that was going to be post-launch patch will just be brought into the core game.
Awesome.
And that's a net positive right there. Okay, good. Right.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Thank you, Silksong. Yeah.
So, what was that?
The one good thing about Silksong is going to make a game I want to play even better.
Yeah, one positive thing. I mean... To be fair, Silksong's not going to be a bad game anyway, but one more positive thing we can say about it in relation to something that is not Silksong itself. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so Strawberry Eggs asked, I think some variation of this question is in the... I think I asked some variation of this question in the past, but it's always an interesting subject. What cancelled RPG or any video game, if you can't think of any, do you wish had actually come out? Which are you just curious about and wish we knew more about? I asked because I was reminded of the existence of Sword of Legendia again. Yeah, they announced that presumably as a spinoff of Tales of Legendia as a like launch era Wii game and then basically never spoke of it again.
I'm going to say, I remember we've had this question a few times and I'm betting, Dave, that you could probably guess at least two or three of the games I'm thinking of right now.
At least one of those is going to be like Metal Max Wild West.
Okay, never mind. Three or four of the games I'm thinking of. I hadn't even somehow I'd forgotten Wild West, but yes, Wild West for sure is just, but most of the others I can think of, we actually had more material to be seen about the game than that.
There's a number you could be talking about. We talk about some weird stuff.
Yeah. Well, so... I saw this question like the day or two before, so I actually stopped by a game store the other day and checked the weekly Famitsu magazine.
Yeah,
the most recent one. And
the fucking like level 5 thing that they've been promising for like a decade and a half at this stage.
Well, I mean, no, level 5 has not been promising this. It's simply on the looking forward to page. They just take letters from readers who are voting for which.
And there are like 5,000 people who have nothing else to do with their lives.
500.
Okay. Yeah.
Anytime this game gets high enough in the rankings for it to actually show how many people voted, it has been consistently about between 500 and 600 people.
The same 500 people.
It's currently at 36 on the ranking, just because a whole lot of people are voting for Trails right now.
For
upcoming games. But Ushiro has been trending on games we want to see on this list for, I'm going to say, about 17 years at this point. Because I think 2008 or 2009 was the last we actually heard anything incredible about this game existing.
Mm-hmm.
And these people keep sending write-in votes for, we want to see this game, and they keep updating whichever platform they wanted on to depending on what's actually available, because this thing was a PSP game on announcement.
Allegedly at one point they claimed they were bringing it back and then went radio silent on it again.
So for the audience in reference, this is a most likely defunct concept from Level 5, a dark comedy mystery horror RPG about a ghost that rides around on somebody's back and solves mysteries.
Cool.
Yeah. It was a really cool concept. There's some wonderfully weird art for it. I know we have it on the old site, in the archive site. Like I said, nothing concrete has been seen about it since about 2009, maybe.
So I looked it up.
And,
Okay,
you looked up.
I looked it up. Akihiro Hino said something about the game coming to Switch like 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they went radio silent on it again. Which just seems like, at this point, a cruel joke.
Yep. Okay, well, our last news on it was from 2009. Let's see, when was the last time I... last time Japan Demonium updated it was 2008, which is what I'm remembering. Oh, that's the art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2008. So, Level 5's annual event in... It's... Oh! Literally 16 years ago today... Today, August 25th, was the last news item we have had about this game where it actually had something to support its existence.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was part of the Level 5 Vision event in Japan, again,
yeah,
to this day, exactly today, 16 years ago, August 25th,
mm-hmm.
Japan time. And
yeah.
And so, and they were showing Inazuma 11-2, Ni no Kuni, Fantasy Life, which at that time, Fantasy Life was still a DS game.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually came out for 3DS with several different job classes than were originally shown.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
excuse me.
So the company also revealed that some games such as Ushiro and Inazuma 11 Break have not been canceled, but are not in a state where the company is prepared to show them off.
Mm-hmm.
I think Break actually happened, right? I can't remember.
That sounds like one of the Inazuma 11s that probably came out, but there is an Inazuma 11 that is like 11 years late at this stage, so who knows?
Yep. Okay, so yeah, so let's see. Metal Max Wild West, Ushiro, that's two of the games I can think of. Any guesses on the others?
Not immediately. I feel like I'm missing something very obvious.
Well, it's another PSP game.
PSP game. I can think of ones of those that were notably canceled.
This one has not been really heard of for about 12 years at this point.
Yeah, go ahead and just tell me, because I feel like I'm missing something and I'm going to be real pissed.
It's a Gust game called Chronos Materia.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have known it by name, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I actually... At TGS 1 year, I actually asked a representative from Gust if there was any news about this game. This must have been like 2014. And she had no idea what I was talking about. And this was pretty close to the Koei Tecmo takeover.
Yeah, so, I'd imagine that in that takeover, if there was anything still working on it, it was killed.
Yeah. No, I mean, just again, looking at the screens again and remembering what was said about the in-game time manipulation mechanic for... changing items.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious some of this game went into Nora's Timely Workshop or Timely Studio, which was one of their last games for the DS. Very similar mechanics involved, similar art style. Nora was their collaboration with the Etrian Odyssey Studio.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, this Chronos Materia looks like. It has some Etrian Odyssey in it. Actually, it looks like it has more in it than Nora does. battle system is very similar.
Gotcha. So that might be sort of three. What it turned into.
Yeah, that's three.
So number four.
Next one I'm thinking of was definitely 3DS.
Huh.
Yeah.
Nope, drawing a blank.
I think Penguins.
Oh, Kaio King of Pirates.
Yep. Marvelous. No, I mean, produced by Marvelous.
Concept thing.
Only media we have for this comes from 2011.
Yeah, like this was announced when the 3DS launched.
Yeah. Supposed release date sometime in 2012. So it is obviously at least 13 years late at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be from a Keiji Inafune project, which means he probably crashed on it.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, well, that's four games now.
Okay. Yeah, I could pull up some weird oddities. There and was a...
I had one left, but it was I'm trying to remember which platform it was supposed to be on. I was thinking Game Boy Advance, but it may have been Game Boy Color.
You got more info for me? A name?
I'm just trying to confirm that I actually got the right name. Okay, it was Game Boy Color or Advance. Mithri.
Oh yeah, I know one of the people that worked on Mithri.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
Steve. Did they ever do anything else with it? I remember that one actually had was completed, but they just couldn't find a publisher.
Yeah, no, that didn't nothing ever got done with that, sadly.
I was kind of surprised they never tried to put it on Steam or something after that became a thing.
I think at some point it became like there just wouldn't be a lot of. I think that, you know, by the time that would have been viable, the game would have been like 15 years old, and I'm not sure how well in contact some of those people still were with each other at that stage, and you'd have to work out everything with everyone.
Yeah, I figured it would be something like that, because I mean, it's not like there aren't games that look quite a bit like it on Steam right now. But I was figuring it had to be like
a ride. You mentioned DBC, I was thinking like, oh, this might be Mithri.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise I don't know a lot of other games that were definitively canceled that I would actually be interested in seeing.
I'm not sure this would have been good, but I would have liked to have seen in the era of the N64, Nintendo had contracted with Makoto Tezuka to work on a game based off of Jungle Emperor. That was shown a few times and seemed to be sort of a Zelda type construction. It showed up at a few Space Worlds in like 1997, and then like it disappeared. The only thing we know is that like about its death was basically that like they wanted to cooperate with Tezuka's son Makoto Tezuka, and ultimately like they're just he just could not commit enough time for that to really make sense. So that title showed a few times. There's a few bits of surviving footage of it, but we know very little about it.
Which is just sad, because you know, if a son Tezuka had actually lived long enough, he probably would have just been tickled pink to have a video game.
Absolutely.
Yeah, massively. I mean, that guy just loved life.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was...
He was also very prone to overcommitting his time on projects. So,
yeah.
Like,
you would have seen him attached. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You would have seen him attached to at least a few game projects if he had lived long enough. But yeah, that's one that I think would be kind of interesting. If we'd gotten to see it as another sort of Zelda action-adventure type N64 game, you're not going to hear me complaining about the idea of more of those existing in this world.
Or Earthbound 64.
Yeah, Mother 3 is an obvious one. Like the 3D version of Mother 3, I should say. Let's see... Trying to think of some ones that I actually want to see, because like I can list you a number of these that like I know existed in some stage of development at some point, but which I don't think I'd have cared too much to actually see the result of. For example, there was there was a sequel to Bizarre Lord of the Rings FF10 knockoff, the Third Age Lord of the Rings, The White Council, that never showed its face anywhere. But, you know, it's one of those, like, I personally wouldn't care I wouldn't care over much about that. The... I'm one of the ones that I'd be fascinated by just because I want to see why, what state it was in when they killed it, was that there was, after the original Witcher game did better on PC than expected, a second company was hired to sort of half port, half remake it for PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, and that version called Witcher Rise of the White Wolf just disappeared after a while. I'm kind of curious what that looked like when they killed it. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff like this, but most of the stuff that I here's another one that might have been mildly interesting. So BioWare had on the original Xbox a game like right at the end of that system's lifetime, Jade Empire, that was like, we made sort of a Wuxia RPG that is maybe a bunch of white Canadian guys shouldn't have been making this, but that's what we had. It was an interesting idea. It would have been interesting to see them follow up on it. And there is, there were several different attempts at BioWare to make sequels to that. One of them was like a fairly direct sequel. It was another Wuxia RPG. Another was a truly strange idea where they were going to make a sequel to it, but that it was set in modern, it had been sealed away and was coming back. And that sounded like kind of an interesting idea. Like, it would have been, this would have been like an Xbox 360 game probably releasing around the same time as like Mass Effect 2 or Dragon Age Origins, if they had had the manpower to actually make it. This was kind of an interesting, kind of a weird concept to take this sort of medieval East Asian fantasy game and make a sequel that took place in a modern city. There was some interest in that idea. I would not have said no to that. I've been thinking about these just because one of the people that was at like executive producer at BioWare that I routinely point out does good videos on YouTube has been talking about some canceled stuff. So like, there's the circa 2016, 2017 pitch for Dragon Age 4 that was codenamed Joplin, that was kind of a heist game that would have been interesting to see. And on the same tip for things that I think would have been interesting to see, we might throw in like, I don't necessarily want these more than what we got, but I think they would have been interesting to see, would be Black Isle Studios, Van Buren, and Jefferson. Van Buren was the original version of Fallout 3 that had a lot of its ideas scavenged and reincorporated into New Vegas. But it was a very different Fallout 3 than what ended up being produced by Bethesda. And then Jefferson was the name for Black Isle Studios' Baldur's Gate 3. I think it was called, outside of its code name of Jefferson, I think it was called Baldur's Gate 3 The Black Hound. But yeah, it was another one of those things that like, it was kind of an interesting, like, there's a lot of design documents floating around for Van Buren. I'm not sure how much design doc exists, like design documentation for what the intentions were for Jefferson are. But it would have been interesting. Apparently, several people that worked on Jefferson ended up working for Obsidian. So some of those elements may have been incorporated into Neverwinter Nights to but yeah, like just one of those things where it's like a lot of talented designers there with a publisher that was shooting itself in the foot repeatedly and then stopping just long enough to reload so they could shoot themselves in the foot some more. So I would be interested in seeing what those looked like. We have a document for Van Buren Fallout 3, so we actually know a fair bit about what that would have looked like, along with like some alpha test of it. You can, if you squint, you can figure out what Fallout 3 Van Buren might have looked like to a much greater extent than Blackhound, which I am not aware of a lot of material for what that version looked like leaking, but I could be wrong. Wheels, Joe, you got any canceled games you pine after?
I had one more dimension.
Okay.
This one's so obscure, our game page on the old site no longer functions.
Hooray!
Yeah, it you can search for it on and actually find it on the game's on the old site's search, which I mean we know is notoriously finicky, but the page no longer exists, which is kind of weird. But
yeah.
Do you remember they were planning to make a Rune Lords game based on the 90s fantasy novel series?
Ugh, man, that's deep in the memory hole.
I mean, not the time when it was announced, because apparently it was going to be for Game Boy. Or Game Boy Color. So. But yeah, that was a weird, an interesting choice, I remember there being. I just remember I was trying to find more about it, but I can't actually find anything else about it. Like I said, we no longer appear to have a page for it. Wait a minute. Unless here, one moment. No, okay. Yeah, we don't have a page for it. Web search comes up with nothing at this point. The series Wikipedia page does not mention its existence. So, who knows? There's just an interesting idea that I'm kind of hesitant to wonder how they fit that series magic system into a game format, considering how it worked. But it would have been interesting to see.
Certainly.
Yeah.
I want to play Scalebound.
Oof. Yeah, Scalebound was Platinum Games and Hideki Kamiya making a some sort of cooperative multiplayer action RPG / dragon riding game.
Yeah.
Okay. And Microsoft canceled in 2017.
Yeah, Microsoft hyped the crap out of it for so long, and then it's canceled.
It was the centerpiece of several, or not necessarily the centerpiece, but it was a big part of several E3 showcases. Allegedly, there were a few problems with that, as far as I can tell. One of the big ones was that the game, the technology doesn't seem to have been there to do what both parties wanted. And the other seems to have been
that was pretty often the case for Xbox development.
Yeah.
The other issue is that there was supposedly some disagreement between between Microsoft and Platinum about what kind of game they were wanting to make. Microsoft was most interested in hyping the online multiplayer elements, and that was, you know, certainly in the pitch, but it wasn't necessarily the primary point as far as Platinum was concerned. So that kind of impasse can create problems for ongoing projects. And I think ultimately, allegedly, what killed it, according to the most knowledgeable source I ever heard on the project, which was a journalist who does a lot of YouTube videos about canceled games, Liam Robertson, mentioned something about, I think, essentially several members of project leadership essentially had to take sabbaticals around the same time because like it was just going that poorly, and during that period there was less opportunity to protect the project basically. But yeah, it's an interesting, long, and kind of sad story. Yeah, it's a bit of a shame that Seobound died. In that same vein, I don't think they're going to ever go so far as to acknowledge it long enough to kill it. But before Hideki Kamiya left Capcom, not Capcom, before he left Platinum, he had started development on something called Project GG, which was allegedly an Ultraman-inspired action game that probably would have been kind of interesting to play, and which we will almost assuredly never see. So that's a bit of a sad one to see die. You got any wheels?
No.
Then I will close out on the one that I've referenced time and again because it's extremely funny. FMV Apocalyptic Dancing Fireman Game Duelin' Fireman. I bring it up every time canceled games come up because it's deranged, and they seem to have filmed basically all the footage and then not ever made a game around it. But there is a 7.5 minute trailer on YouTube, and it makes the game seem completely, absolutely goddamn out of its mind. Which you probably should have been able to guess from the phrase, like, apocalyptic dancing fireman game.
Was there ever a Burning Rangers sequel in development?
I've never heard any tell of a Burning Rangers 2.
Because you mentioned firemen, and I don't know why.
No, I figured that's why that came from. Yeah, I mean, it is a game about firemen.
Yeah,
but
and a firewoman.
Yeah, so I've linked the Duelin' Fireman trailer in Wheels' Discord. Peruse this if you ever want to feel like you are going insane. It genuinely just looks like a fever dream. What a baffling. you could just make an FMV game about anything for a period of about 2 years.
Plumbers don't wear ties.
Plumbers don't wear ties. That's barely even full motion video. Like, there is barely any video component to that. But yeah, Night Trap, Sewer Shark, Mad Dog McCree, Wirehead. FMV games could be anything you wanted as long as it was cheap.
Sewer Shark.
Yeah, Sewer Shark. Did you know a lot of those early Sega CD FMV games were originally conceived for a totally different disaster of a product?
The 32X?
No.
The Saturn?
The Hasbro Nemo / Control Vision.
What the fuck is that?
It was a game console that ran on VHS tapes.
Wow!
What?
Yeah, I remember, I knew it had to be that, but I couldn't remember what the thing was called.
You mean like Atmosphere?
But yeah, filming for Sewer Shark was the first two games made for the Control Vision. The never released Control Vision were Night Trap and Sewer Shark.
Wow.
Did you ever play Atmosphere?
I did not, but I've seen it.
You! Everyone stop! Put your hands up! Whose turn is it next? Hands up! You're banished! Yeah. We had fun with that. That was one of those VHS board games. And of course, now I'm thinking about the episode of Community that,
mm-hmm.
you know, destroyed Abed's relationship.
Yeah, that's a very good episode. Sad, yes. Good.
Yeah.
Apparently there is a planned control. If Wikipedia is to be a vision game based on the Police Academy franchise, which sounds like one of the worst ideas anyone has ever had.
Oh, I would play that. What are you talking about?
I mean, it
about?
Couldn't be worse than some of the later movies in that series, but I mean, I could see something working.
Such a thing would have been made sometime between Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach, and Police Academy 6, City Under Siege.
But to be fair, those are about the two best movies in the series, and they're not that good, but they're still better than most of the others that came before and after. So
there's only one after them. It's Police Academy Mission to Moscow in 1994.
No, there was 777 as well. There's two movies after 6.
I only know of the 1/7 film, but maybe I'm just not up on my Police Academy lore.
I know I've seen them, and I tried my best to forget them, but 5 and 6 I have a soft spot for, even though I know they're really dumb movies, but they're still better than most of that series.
How do we feel about Police Academy, the animated series?
It exists! I remember seeing it a few times.
Yeah,
there are 65 whole episodes of that.
Okay, I thought there was a movie that... Maybe it had a different number.
Maybe there was a market-based title where it was called that.
I mean, if there was an FMV Police Academy game and they got Bobcat Goldthwait to do it, that'd be the coolest thing ever.
Yeah. I mean, granted, quite a few of the actors in that series had their entire careers based on it by that point, so they would have been able to get most of the actors.
Steve Gutenberg. Who makes Steve Gutenberg a star? Yeah. We do.
They would have gotten Michael Winslow. They would have gotten David Graff. So,
what did Homer say about that? He's like, "Oh, why do you think I took you to those Police Academy movies? I wasn't laughing. Well, except for that guy who made the funny sound effects with his mouth." Yeah.
Yeah.
In conclusion, everyone go look up the last surviving trailer of Doolin Fireman.
And also go watch Police Academy.
I will not. I don't have that in May right now.
I like the first one.
I don't have this in May right now.
I didn't like the first one that much. I saw it a lot later than the rest, so.
Okay.
But yeah, canceled games are an endless hole. But we'll get
Moscow, out. The Wikipedia page has a link to list of films with a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Important.
I didn't think it was that bad, but it was still pretty awful. Okay.
But yeah, so that's canceled games are an infinite well. I think we'll probably get asked this again, and we probably will have different answers next time.
I'll probably have the same 5 or 6 games.
I'll have different answers, but I will also probably bring up Doolin Fireman again.
I want to say we already had an in-depth conversation about Sonic Extreme for the Saturn, so we probably don't need to go into that, but yeah, there was a magazine I got when I was a teenager. I had the Saturn, and issue after issue after issue was, oh, look at these screenshots, you're gonna be able to throw rings at people, and there's a jungle stage, and it just never happened. And I think you told me it had something to do with they didn't want to share the Nights into Dreams engine with Sonic.
Yeah, there was a whole kerfuffle about the technology around it and who had who was allowed to use what technology. And ultimately, the thing that fully killed it was that the core person who was keeping the project afloat, I want to say the programmer, basically, like, after 9 months of continuous crunch, took severely ill and had to be hospitalized. And that was.
Jeez.
That was all she wrote for the game actually coming out on time for it to make sense, so they killed it.
I wonder how much of it was recycled into Sonic Adventure?
Not much, if any.
Okay.
Like, the entirety of Extreme was built around its weird camera angle. Like, it ultimately, like, it's one of those games that, like, is interesting to think about, but when you actually look at footage of it, you get the sense, oh, this looks kind of nauseating to play.
Yeah.
So it's maybe for the best that it didn't end up happening. Okay, and we've got a question from Shaman. I play Pokemon Go regularly, and the developers announced on the day of the post that they are raising the trainer level cap from 50 to 80. I know MMOs normally go up 5 or maybe 10 levels at a time, but it tends to be tied to expansions, which are every 18 months to 2 years. And this is the first level increase in Pokemon Go since 2020.
Jeez.
And Go is also adjusting the experience curve for lower 2020. Levels.
I'm Barbara Walters.
In an ongoing game, is there a preferred way to approach increases to the maximum level? I'd imagine, like, as someone who is inexpert at this, as a non-ongoing game player, you actually kind of want to avoid level increases where you can help it. Just because they give, like, returning players new things to do, like, something to chase after, something to keep going, so make it more intimidating for new players to reach that end game that the older players are sitting at. And so I feel like that's why they tend to be really controlled about adding them. This does remind me, I need to see if the new EverQuest expansion has been announced.
Oh boy.
Why?
Does it exist? So
this is important. We practice every year.
It's true.
This is a Q&A quest tradition. Okay, so the most recent EverQuest expansion was expansion number 31, The Outer Brood, which came out December 3rd, 2024. And it raised the level, like, it kept the level cap at 125, which had been raised to in the previous 30th expansion, Lorien's Song, from December 6th, 2023. Which had raised it from 120 to 125. It's wild to think that this is a set of expansion packs that has ultimately, like, more than doubled the game's level cap, but over 30 expansion packs, that's relatively restrained.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh my god, there's so many of these. Okay, has another one been announced yet? It does not appear that another one has been announced yet, although that doesn't really mean much. I think they're usually announced about a month before they come out. Because who are you trying to sell them to? Only people who are already playing EverQuest.
Wasn't there an EverQuest 2?
Yes,
that's still ongoing as well.
And Final Fantasy 11 is still ongoing?
When I say still ongoing with regards to EverQuest 2, I mean they are still releasing expansions to it.
Okay.
Final Fantasy 11, they are not.
Like, yeah. Like, EverQuest 2, Scars of Destruction came out, its 21st expansion pack came out on November 20th, 2024.
Jeez.
Final
Fantasy 11 had a really good run of it in any case, because remember that was the last PlayStation 2 game that kept showing up in sales data.
I think the very last one.
This is Mike the Defect. What?
You're
defective?
The name of the character, the Defect.
Okay. But.
Yeah, like,
I couldn't resist a chance to say, you're defective. Yeah, sorry.
But yeah, as far as I can tell, I think the very last FF11 content finally sunned down to the PS2 version. I think the very last FF11 content was only on PC, but it took a very long time.
Yes, I mean, less than 10 years ago, I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and my to personal your point,
favorite
I was going to say, to your point, I took another break from Final Fantasy 14, and I'm still, like, in between, you know, still trying to do the end of the Stormblood content, the 40 quests that they added before, you know, Shadowbringers came out. And it's like, maybe someday I'll hit the level cap, but it's just going to take a lot of time and effort, and I just get burned out. And I don't know what I would do if I ever actually hit the level cap in a game like that. I think I would probably just stop playing. Like, that's pretty much what happened in Guild Wars 2. Like, I hit level 80, and then you could do these, like, fractal dungeons, and I'm like, well, why, though? Like, and then I got the first expansion and then barely touched it because it just the time had passed. Yeah.
I think certain kinds of players are drawn to that, like, levels within levels content, but certain kinds of players, such as myself, just immediately, like, my eyes glaze over.
Yeah.
I mean, like we mentioned earlier in this particular episode's podcast, there are just some people who refuse to go find new stuff after they get a game that fits them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I will briefly bring up...
Okay. Yes.
Oh, the other thing I was going to bring up was just to tie off the EverQuest thought with, it's very funny that there was an EverQuest game only for PS2 that, despite having, I think at peak about 30,000 players, still was online for 9 years.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe 8 people ever played EverQuest Online Adventures. But there was a single expansion, and then they just sort of let it sit there with its tiny, very loyal player base for nearly a decade. very strange. But you can apparently get fan run servers for EverQuest Online Adventures if you're that into it, which I mean, good for them, I guess. I can't imagine being that person, but good for them that since they exist. But yeah. What I would say is that, like, developers are always kind of careful about this, since a lot of traditional MMOs also, like, you know, if you're introducing a higher level cap, you kind of have to include new gear to go along with it, and that means that when you do that, you're invalidating, like, everyone who had the quote-unquote optimized build now has to go and redo their build.
That's probably why I ultimately walked away from Destiny 2, because I was just tired of having to reacquire new gear.
You're thinking? Oh god, no.
But so, like, Final Fantasy 14, like, yeah, I mean, the good news is that there's a lot of activities I don't have to do. The bad news is there's no reason to do them. So, like, I hit level 70, and then I cleared the, you know, preliminary Stormblood content, and then I can just go spend my tomes of poetics on what the best gear would have been at that time. I didn't have to work my way up to it over the course of several patches, and, you know, but again, it's like I have... I think I did 5 or 10 of them, but there was 40 quests that I now have to do all at once, whereas people who were keeping up with it would have just, every couple of months or so, would have just had a couple of quests to do, a new dungeon, maybe some new gear to get, and they would have been happy with that. But for me, it's like, yeah, I'm trying to get caught up, and it's like, oh yeah, like, there's no reason for me to do this activity, there's no reason to do this, and then I get gear that I'm like, okay, well, yeah, this would have been cool, like, if I didn't already just buy the, you know, best gear available for a level 70 character. So
I would imagine, like, to my not entirely in my inexpert understanding, the the idea is usually to do this very gradually, which is why I would expect that this question was asked, because a raising of the level cap by like over a third with 50 to 80 is kind of an unusual move to make. I don't know what trainer level does in Pokégo to understand what the thought process might have been behind that decision, but I find it odd.
Yeah, I never got into Pokemon Go. I just never cared about that one.
Yeah, it was very big about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, when it first came out, I didn't even have a smartphone, so I didn't care.
I had a friend who... Yeah, I had this friend who really wanted to play it, and for whatever reason, he couldn't get it to work on his phone, and he went to the T-Mobile store multiple times, and finally they were just like, dude, we don't know why it won't work. We can't help you. And he wanted me to fix it. And I'm like, Jay, I don't know what to tell you. Like, did you try to reinstall it? Yes. Okay. He just couldn't get it to work right. And I didn't know why, and he couldn't figure out why. And the T-Mobile store was basically just like, stop coming here. And then actually at some point I did install it on my phone and it just worked, and I was just like, I don't know what to tell you, bro. So
I can't speak this to why this is cursed you in this fashion.
I played it for maybe like 20 minutes and there were like no Pokemon near my apartment, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting Let's Go Eevee on the Switch and then Pokemon Sword, and I think I had Sun on the 3DS at the time, and it was like, yeah, I'm not playing Pokemon Go. So,
okay, so we've got a few questions.
I remember my brother visited in like 2015 or 2017 or so, and he started up Pokemon Go again because he'd stopped playing it just to have something to do while he was traveling around.
Yep.
And around Japan, and apparently there are a lot of bear Pokemon in my area. The name of the city. He discovered that the streetcar that runs down the big avenue near my house goes just slow enough that Pokemon Go registered it as walking pace.
Perfect.
He was like, yeah, I'm cheating.
Let's see. We've got a few questions from Fireminer I want to hit before we go to bed. I'm trying to get these done. Get to bed a little earlier so I don't die. Has anyone here got a review code for Furuyu's upcoming Varlet? Is that how that's spelled? Pronounced?
V-A-R-L-E-T?
Yeah.
Yeah, Varlet.
Yeah. From the earlier reviews I've read, people seem to think that it's a Persona 4 Lite with some neat ideas. Furuyu seems like one of those vanishingly rare middle-of-the-pack Japanese studios that sustains an above-average Japanese RPG. I'm not sure, like, how much I would say that their batting average is consistent enough to label them one way or another, but they are generally one of the few, like, low-budget Japanese RPG developers that makes a lot of, or publishers, I should say, that makes a lot of very...
I was gonna say, in my personal experience, the quality really depends on which studio actually made the game.
Yeah.
For a while, their PSP and Vita, the studios that they represented that did PSP and Vita games... not nearly as good as the games that came out for the 3DS. So
I would imagine they were being assigned smaller budgets too.
Yeah. But, no, I mean, some of these games were really odd, awful. But okay, let's see here. It's definitely a Gakuen Mono, which means that for American audiences, it's going to read as a Persona-like.
Yeah.
Just from the setting and the fact that they're all wearing stylish high school uniforms.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, there's no way to avoid the comparison to Persona, no matter what the game's actually like.
The publisher probably wants that association in the West.
And again, we've discussed this before, but Persona 3 was not actually doing anything new. It was just doing it visibly to the West. But this game looks very similar. I would say that's any comparison.
The kind of game they're trying to make.
Yeah, they are definitely aiming squarely for the middle of this particular subgenre, which means it's going to look a lot like Persona 5. Yeah.
But much, much cheaper.
Not necessarily a bad thing. I mean,
doesn't have to be bad.
Their anime connected one, Hamatora, their Hamatora game. Again, very, very similar in some ways to Persona. I wish that it had been more similar in a few ways because it didn't really have dungeons. Things like that. But and it was also this kind of weird localized tactical battlefield situation. It was pretty cool. But yeah, it was... Yeah, the comparisons are unavoidable even when they're not actually intended. Just because Persona is that this particular subgenre at this point.
Next one. It's by the very nature of the game industry that it's very hard to sell out, so to speak. Has it ever happened? Infinity Nikki recently announced a collaboration with Stardew Valley, and the latter's creator had to go onto Twitter to defend the decision. Some people are so bedazzled by the story of Stardew's one-man creation that they can't even imagine that game collaborating with a notoriously predatory gacha.
Audience problem.
Audience problem. I would also say just like a one-person studio is all the more likely to be like, yeah, I could use the money. I could use the money.
And you're going to do all the work for this? Okay, sure.
But yeah, I would say that I wouldn't really expect different. It's, as mentioned, it's very difficult to, like, the concept of quote-unquote selling out is, you know, very, very tied into a perception of someone producing something where they would produce it even if there was no money in doing so.
From the fans.
Yeah, certainly. Like, that's sort of what I'm getting at. It's like, it's a projection of assumptions onto a creator. But, I can't even think of many, like, because it's so hard to pretend that games aren't collaborative, it's very hard to think of, I think the closest I could think of to what would cause people to mass label someone as having sold out would be if, like, Zun sold the Toho IP or something.
Oh, yeah. That's so out of character, it's ridiculous. I was thinking maybe like some of the quasi auteur types in Japanese gaming, you could almost say that just if they actually just put their name on a game and didn't do anything with it to actually help make it, that would be selling out on their part, but not the game itself.
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah, or it could be seen as that regardless of how things actually are. But but yeah, I mean, if Zune announced that he was selling Toho, I would be seriously questioning his health.
It would be a very strange thing to do.
I'd be very concerned for his health because that would be like, okay, maybe he wants to make sure it's being taken care of because he's not going to be around much longer.
Yeah, although even in that case, I would sooner assume that he would just, like, essentially abandon the copyright rather than, give it to a corporation, but...
Open source! Actually, it's effectively what he's already done.
Yeah, that's basically how it currently functions.
Yeah. I'm not even sure. Cave Story pops to mind, but that's more of a case where the publisher turned predatory.
The publisher, fucked the poor creator out of the rights to their own creation.
Yeah.
Remember, folks, just download the freeware. Don't pay for Cave Story.
Yes. They cannot get rid of the free version. Just play that.
Yeah.
They hate it when you remember it exists.
See also what happened with Disco Elysium and Zaun. But,
How many spiritual sequels have been announced for Disco Elysium at this point?
Five?
Which is incredibly appropriate for Disco Elysium.
And there is an ongoing legal snafu between Zaum and the person who originally conceived of the entire Disco Elysium world. So that's fun. That's not fun at all. It's horrible. But let's see. There are good games with interesting stories about the development. There are bad games with interesting stories about the development. Excluding canceled games, is there any game whose creation myth completely overshadows the game itself? Duke Nukem Forever.
Yeah.
Like, that's easy. That's the free space on that square. Like, that game sucks, but not in a way that's terribly remarkable. The story of its complete failure to... the story of it taking, like, 13 years to come out is significantly more interesting than the product that that came out. That strikes me as honestly probably true of several of these games that like become infamous for taking for goddamn ever to come out. Is that when the game comes out, oftentimes the resultant game is kind of just the obvious spawn of a production cycle where the intentions behind it changed a number of times. And so it ends up being kind of uninteresting. Duke Nukem Forever is the easy shorthand. It is a game that has essentially nothing interesting about it except for how fucking long it took to make and every deranged thing about why it took so long to make. Someone just recompiled Mega Man Legends 1 to make a PC port. I don't think it's a recompile, but it is like someone like fucking with it to make it run on modern computers without barfing.
Somebody ported Mario Kart 64 to the Dreamcast.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't get it either.
I don't get it, but it's like, hey, well, you know, you set a goal for yourself and you stuck to it.
Yeah. It's like those people that made GTA 3 on the Dreamcast.
Yep.
But yeah, as near as they can tell, Final Fantasy
7, 8, 9, or whatever for Nintendo Entertainment System.
I mean, those were just good old fashioned dedicated Chinese bootleggers, but
yeah. Impressive.
The other thing, like they did more than they had to, given that their job was to make a weird bootleg. But yeah, what I'll say about this is this was an existing PC port from the late 90s that just like fell into obscurity because, I mean, why would that be the way that you chose to play it? But now it's like, is, you know, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if this finds its way, if this or something very similar finds its way to GOG eventually. But we shall see. Yes, I know that there's already a PC port for Legends 1 in the 90s, but the new one adds a lot of quality of life improvements. Yeah, but this is just hacks to that version, to be clear. This is not going back to the source. Near as I can tell, it seems to just be hacks and mods on that, which is fine. Like, that's all it really needs to be. But for clarity, that's what it is. But yeah, you know, now you can track that down and run Mega Man Legends 1 on your modern Windows PC, and it will have native gamepad support and will not automatically attempt to assert itself as like a full screen application and fuck with your computer's resolution. So yeah, there's something to be said for that. But yeah, I think that about covers what I have breath to speak, and we're trying to keep these finished these a little earlier. So, I guess I will say, I want to know where I can purchase reading material.
Ah, getting more and more. I was just, I mean, while we were doing this thing today, I was retyping a project I may actually started like 9 years ago, but it's hopefully to be published next year. Okay.
All right.
Working on that. Yeah. Actually, this one, this particular one was inspired by one of the old Q&A quest column conversations Wheels and I had about different mythologies and games or game concepts we could get from them. Mm-hmm. Which at the time reminded me that I had this nice book of Hawaiian mythology on the shelf, and so this particular book has kind of arisen from that. So, yay, Wheels, this is officially one that you inspired. Sort of.
Good job, Wheels.
Is he awake?
He mentioned in the chat that he will have to step out for a moment. Because he cannot breathe through his nose.
Missed that. Okay, so yeah. So, where to start? Where to start? Which item? You know what? Let's start with the short one here. So, we have Tanuki as a Teapot, Japanese folk tales with mostly animal themes, about animals, talking about animals, involving animals, starring animals, occasionally killing animals, because that's the way these stories go sometimes. Yeah, I remember many years ago, my wife and I were visiting her host family in Florida, and the kids were asking us for bedtime stories, and finally they just had to ask for one where nobody died. And we were at a loss to think of a good Japanese folktale that did not have somebody dying in it. Yeah, I mean, one of the most famous ones you have, Kachikachiyama, with the tanuki and the rabbit. Grandma gets killed at the start. Like, murdered. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one where my retelling kind of turned into Bugs Bunny as Grindcore, or Grindhouse.
Nightmare.
Oh, no, I mean, it wasn't that graphic or anything, but...
Yeah.
Yes, Tanuki as a Teapot by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. Japanese folk tales and etc. retold and occasionally illustrated by yours truly, as I could. And then for more video game bent, we have Vainglorious, Long as the Night, which is lit RPG. Which, for the folks at home, that means it's a genre of speculative fiction, often science fiction or fantasy or some weird melange of the two, where the actual textual elements somehow imitate video games, or literally role-playing games. Most of these, you can definitely see the influences of like World of Warcraft, or Dungeons and Dragons, or .hack, or more specifically, right. Sword Art Online, because that was one of the original influences for the modern genre. But no, mine is Metroidvania. Mm-hmm. As it's like, yeah, let's just see how far we can test this definition here, because the genre fans can be very fractious and argumentative over what counts as lit RPG.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just push this a bit. I mean, some of y'all obviously never lived through the what counts as an RPG flame wars of the 20-something years ago.
Oh, God. Seriously,
dude. On the side, they're still having them.
And 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and 25 years ago, this is a perennial evergreen argument.
It still and obviously happens on social these... media once every 7 minutes.
Yeah. And I mean, it's definitely not nearly as... much of a hotbed of mutual contempt as it was in 2008.
I did definitely just see it break out on a Discord I'm in like a week and a half ago.
Wow. Seriously, which games were they arguing over?
I think they were just arguing over it as a general philosophy sense.
So not like the infamous forum guy who used to come visit us who argued that it had to have a field to battle transfer screen and this and that, and basically the only things he considered RPGs were basically wizardry clones.
Yeah.
He did not last. I don't think he's been on the site since 2010.
So. Consider that a good thing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've seen him on Reddit since then. It's kind of fun. I haven't actually introduced myself to him again. He is still a very big fan of Beyond the Beyond. So,
I just think it's me.
Has to be the strongest soldier for the worst dog that you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but yeah, so getting back on track here, then we have the ongoing and hopefully soon to be concluded, because I only have two episodes left, ongoing series, Princesses of the Pizza Parlor.
Dang.
Which currently stands at 13 ebook episodes, now 5 short stories, or side stories, because I actually got the fifth one out like 2 weeks ago.
Damn.
Yay. Yeah. And a novel-length paralogue, so it's... over the past month or so, I've had somebody just reading straight through it, and they're at 2,600 pages read, and they still have the episode 13. So, there's a lot to read in there. Go for it, guys. I've got 2 more episodes left before the actual summertime super arc actually finishes, at which point I get to plan out the epic adventures, eventually. But, I mean, I'm just doing other stuff in here. Like I said, I've been typing up a Polynesian pastiche mythic hero's journey narrative. That's basically what this one is I'm working on right now. Mm-hmm. Which is different. It's a very different style of narrative and a different style of prose that I'm used to using. So it's kind of fun. Let's see, under a completely different... Actually, not completely different, but... a different pen name, Michael Spearwater. I have A Wager for Wanderlust, which is a travelogue romanticy. Just because a couple NaNoWriMos ago, I really wanted to challenge myself, and I knew I needed to work on certain types of personal interaction and scenes. And I was never going to actually have a chance with the young adult fantasy series. So it's like, okay, I'll just do something completely different. Did something completely different. It's fun. I wish more people were actually noticing that it existed. But yeah, that's under Michael Spearwater, which actually is a real English name. It's just incredibly rare. Did not realize this until I actually tried searching it up, but it should be like one of the few hits on that one. Yeah. Choosing a good pen name is difficult, you know?
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Especially if the entire point is to make it easier to show up on web searches. It's like, I can't find my real name on web searches to save my life. It's ridiculous. Okay. But yeah, so that's one, two, counting just paperbacks, this is currently 8 paperbacks. Working on a 9th and a 10th. Trying to finish off a tetralogy. I've got one section left of a tetralogy to finish. Soonish. I'm taking a break from that one right now to work on other stuff. And have a completely different trilogy that's currently tied up in legal proceedings. Stupid publisher. It's bad when the worst thing your publisher does is literally nothing, as in you don't hear from them for literally 10 months or more.
Oh, boy.
Yep. So they're currently being cited for failure to do anything at all.
That happens.
Yep. So, should that actually pan out, I will have, 9 books, in process for next year. Probably not all of them published next year, but I'm just giving up on regular publications. I'm just doing everything myself at this point.
Can't blame you at that stage.
Yeah. I mean, will they be as good as they could have been under an actual professional publisher? Maybe, maybe not. Will they be as successful? Definitely not. Will they actually exist? Yes. So, there's that. Okay.
So there's your indie reading assignment. We expect you all to have read all of these by next week.
How about next month or year, you know? Give them some time. This is...
Okay, yeah, you have to report you have to have read at least one by next week, and you need to report it.
Yeah. Go for one of the Pizza Princess stories. They're all novellas, except for the paralogue, okay?
But I think the first one's free anyway.
Oh, no, the first one's only free for the author's birthday sale. You can't actually set a price to zero normally on Amazon.
Gotcha, it has to be on sale to set it to zero. Gotcha. Yeah.
It's still like as cheap as I could make it.
Yeah, it's still very cheap.
Yeah, cheap, short. The paralogue novel is like 140 something thousand words, so it's not short. Yeah,
but if you just want some light readings, you got the. You've definitely got options for just like more bite size. Stories. Let's see. So, Joe, where can they find you?
Yes, you can find me on the RP Gamer Twitch channel, which you're tuning into right now, possibly. And I am still trying to get through Visions of Mana. I got to a very long, difficult dungeon, but I think I might be fighting the final boss very soon. So the plan is to stream that tomorrow night between 10 p.m. and 12 a.m. Eastern Time on the RP Gamer Twitch channel, and hopefully I'll be rolling credits by the end of that. We'll see. And on Thursdays, I've been streaming 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on the RP Gamer channel Eastern Time. And so I've just been alternating between Visions of Mana and Rune Factory, Guardians of Azuma. So hopefully once I finish Visions of Mana, then it'll either just be Rune Factory 2 days a week until I finish that, or maybe I'll find another one. I kind of like to have two games to switch between so I don't get burned out on either one.
That's a good idea. Good strategy.
Yeah. And I do still have my own Twitch channel, twitch.tv/smokeandjoegamer. I haven't gotten much use out of it recently, but, you know, that could change. We got Sega Tember coming up. We got Spooky Hallow Stream coming up. Those are two things I do every year. I didn't do Arcade August this year. I felt like I played some good arcade games last year and got a handful of views here and there, but... Yeah, I haven't been doing much on YouTube, unfortunately, just because the subscribers and the viewers are just not quite there. But I picked up some more vinyl records, so I might bring back my series, The Vinyl Guy, where I just review vinyl records and talk about albums that I like. So I might bring that back. I actually got a vinyl copy of Fleetwood Mac Rumors gold limited edition vinyl, and I listened to it. I'm like, yeah, this is just one of the best albums ever made, and everybody owns a copy. And hey, that might get some views, right? So I might do that. But yeah, obviously on RP Gamer, I will only be streaming RPGs. But if I want to do like survival horror or anything else like that, that'll end up on my Twitch channel or YouTube. Yeah, so since I have PlayStation Plus Premium, it looks like Capcom finally added Resident Evil 2 and 3, you know, the old PS1 games. And I got free copies because I already bought them on the PS3, you know, 15 years ago. So I was playing a little bit of that version of Resident Evil 2. It's got some good emulation, save states, rewind, which are very important, some upscaling and texture filtering. And then I played as Claire, and I did the thing where you fight Brad, and you get the special key, and I was almost dead and had no bullets, and I'm really struggling to get through the police station now. But, yeah, that's what I was playing this week. I've also been playing some Animal Crossing and a few other things. Civilization VII finally clicked with me, so I was up all night playing that one day. That wasn't, you know, it was fun, but I shouldn't have done that, getting too old for the ship. And just one quick joke, you can interact with me on the RP Gamer Discord server. one day somebody posted, what is an RPG? And of course, I instinctively rushed in there and said, a miserable little pile of secrets.
And that was good and proper.
Yes. Yeah, so, and I did get a few laughs from that one. So yeah, great community on the RP Gamer Discord if you want to join that. And of course, shout outs to Moogle Lactomancer, Fire Miner, and No Bake, and, you know, anyone else who has watched the streams, you know, and they also watch this stream too, apparently. So yeah, let's keep giving them some good content.
And as for everyone else, thanks to Strawberry Eggs, Shaman, and Fire Miner for giving us questions to feast upon and chew. I don't have words. Thanks once again to them. Thanks to anyone listening to this. If you would like to ask us questions, as they sometimes do, you can go to, if you catch us when we're streaming at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, although we might be moving that back a little, plus maybe 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 Eastern, Monday nights, on twitch.tv/rpgamer or twitch.tv/askwheels. You can ask us questions in real time as we continue to record the podcast and sometimes remember to check the chat. You can also ask us questions in the comments section under this episode on rpgamer.com, or you can ask us questions in the RPGamer Discord in the podcast section. If you're not a member of the RPGamer Discord, you can go to rpgamer.com and go to the community tab, and that will get you an invite. It's a lovely community, whether you want to ask us questions or not, but we always appreciate them. Otherwise, we also have our sister show, Shenanigans, where video games are played to some varying degree of multiplayer every Sunday, 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Forthcoming, we will probably get in some Daemon X Machina 2 sometime in the coming weeks. But otherwise, I think that is probably about it for us this week. So see you, Space Cowboys.